Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Our guest, Marion Jacobs, a psychosocial therapist and BA philosopher, is back with us to discuss her extensive research into the penal system, her work in the Dutch prison system with restorative justice, and from that experience, how she developed a vision on the approach of incarceration called deeper justice. Deeper justice means literally doing justice to oneself on a deeper level. This is further interpreted as time in prison used for gaining self-insight and insight into what led to the crime. So it's not about why one offended, but the question as to what actually led to that moment he or she committed the crime. Ms. Jacobs concluded there is no judgment, but a search behind judgment for the person behind the incarcerated man or woman. So let's welcome Marion Jacobs once again. Marion, are you on with us? Marion? Hello? Are you on us? Hello? Have difficulties again. I don't know what is going on. Marion, if you can hear me. Hello? Hello. It appears that we have lost our guest. Lost guest once again. Hold on. Okay, Maria. I am so sorry for this issue that we've been having, and I just wanted to let you know. I just sent in another request. I am so sorry. I don't know what has been going on with the sound, but coming from the Netherlands, maybe that's the problem. I don't know. But how are you this afternoon or this evening, according to your schedule?
Oh, yes, I'm fine. The weather is very hot in the Netherlands, and we are not used to that, so, but I'm very fine. Thank you.
It's been very hot here in the United States as well.
Yeah, and you had hurricanes in Florida, maybe?
Oh, the earthquake in North Carolina. They have been having hurricanes, too. It's crazy. So, Mariam, now that we have you on, finally, can you tell the audience a little bit about yourself again, and then we can get into your information on deeper justice. And also, you have written a book recently, and I was wondering if you could share that information as well.
Yes. Can you please repeat the first question? Sorry. Your first question was?
Pardon?
You asked me three questions. What's the first question you asked me?
I'd like to know a little bit about your thoughts. You had mentioned deeper justice, and a lot of people are questioning as to what that actually means. And if you can go on about that, just to explain to everyone what deeper justice is, and then on to your book as well. and I believe it is on Deeper Justice.
Yes, I am still writing the book. I'm in the middle of research process and the writing. Deeper Justice on the personal level of incarcerated people is about the approach of people who are incarcerated in prisons. And it's about connecting to the human being behind the crime. So then it's very important to go beyond judgment, because I always say judgment is made already in court. If I approach and work with incarcerated people, I don't feel a need to judge them, because that has already been done, or their crime has been judged. What I find important to do, and what deeper justice means, is to look at everything that has been of influence in the life of a person that led to the crime, and all without judgment. I keep saying that. So I also look with the officer to the crime he has committed, and
we're still having a little connection problem here. I can, you know what it is? It's kind of like a in and out. I'm trying to see if, okay. If you can go on, I can think I can still hear you. We can hear, it's just a little bit muffled.
Okay. So that's what I mean, that when I work with the people, these people, that it's about doing justice to yourself on a deeper level. So that's in fact basically what deeper justice is. And I work with what I call the web of influence. So that's again, that you look at all the elements in somebody's life and make a web of it, because if you see the red wire, if you become a red wire, you get insight in what you do to your client. So then you can do just for yourself, and you get to a higher awareness about yourself. That's for me the true healing. What I write my book about, it's then I start with the system itself, because I see the same approach of deeper justice. What I see with working with individuals, I see back in the whole of the system. So when I started to write my book, I started with a question, and that question was, how is it possible that mass incarceration still exists while we know on the surface about all the aspects that led to mass incarceration, like the history of about the Jim Crow laws that has been, you know, about all kinds of elements that led to mass incarceration. We know what is happening now. We know about, you know, what you mentioned a few weeks ago, about a man who was boiled in the shower. We don't know about everything, and still it's going on. I want to hear an answer to the question, what makes mass incarceration able? What keeps it going on? And I want to go further than the facts we already know. try to add something in there, because there are, of course, a lot of films already, there are books already, there are documentaries. We have 3011, one of the best documentaries ever made. So there are things on the beyond the surface that makes mass incarceration going on, and I try to get those elements on the surface, to the surface. And I am in the middle of researching it. What I discover is that there are mechanisms, like the mechanism of discipline, the mechanism of power, etc., which makes this possible. And I even have to go back 200 years ago. You know that I study it, I'm a philosopher, and I'm doing my master. So I also get a lot of information about the mechanisms from the view, from a philosophical view. So I also want to do deeper justice to the system as a whole. Because if you want to stop mass incarceration, if you want to do prison reform or abolish the system, you only can do that if you look at the web of influence that's around the prison system. The prison system does not exist on an isolated way. We know on the surface that it has to do with the industries, it has to do with economics. Politics is a very, very important element. I'm going back to history, to other precedents that have been, but also what I see now, that the current precedent is, I see a repeat of other Republican precedents who also made it possible to keep mass incarceration going on, and also keep a way of slavery going on. And it's very important to see the mechanisms. So not only the happenings itself, we all are talking about it. What drives these happenings? And the same mechanisms, I have recently had my first contact with someone who works in a prison in Norway, because Norway is for me the opposite of the United States, both democratic countries. Are you still there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I see. So I am very curious in Norway, and I have made now the appointment that when I have asked lots of questions about the system in the United States, I want to ask exactly the same questions to the people in Norway, because in Norway, you have the same mechanisms, you also have discipline, you also have power, etc., etc. So I want to see where things get different. I mentioned to you the film that the warden of the Hamburg prison in Norway, physically Africa prison in United States, it was breaking the circle, that film, you've seen that. And in that film, you see the huge differences. Then I think, you know, the film is made. The man, the warden from Norway, has explained about the system in Norway. He has shown the numbers of that it works, because the numbers of recidivism is very low in Norway. Still, though, is the question then, why and how is it possible that mass incarceration keeps on going while we know that the system in Norway does work? The system in the Netherlands works a lot better. So there must be an answer to this question, and I want to try to find that answer.
I believe
this book.
I believe the answer is in the human body. I believe that people in your country and other countries who have so much little recidivism rates because of the humane treatment that they have is the answer. Unfortunately, in this country, we have a government and many people who are for vengeance and retaliation, who have cold hearts and could care less. Other countries seem to be working, and I don't see any of the government officials or anyone in that capacity trying to follow suit with the way prisons are operated in the United States. They prefer to keep everything.
Yes. I think when I look at the political side, then I think there is already a huge difference. In the United States, you can choose you can make a choice from two parties, either Democrats or the Republicans. In the Netherlands, we already start with more parties when they win the elections, there are also two or more parties. How do you say that in English? Who govern the country? So they have to negotiate together. They have to work together. That's already a start. So what I see when I look at mechanisms, what I see in the United States, you see it's a country of polarities. But between one polarity and another polarity, there are a lot of nuances. And I think what is needed in the United States is that the nuances between the polarities are emphasized. And what you see now is that only the polarities themselves are emphasized. And what I thought about was that when you look at the prison system and you look at mass incarceration, then I call it a totalitarian system inside a democratic system. You see, it has the elements of a totalitarian country or a totalitarian regime, like we had in World War II here when we had nationalism. I think that's one of the mechanisms that diversity between polarities should have to be emphasized, and not only the polarities themselves. And something is also going away, which, I think is very obvious. The racial problem that is going on never really stops. I also see that now that I'm going back to precedents from Nixon, from what happened after the Jim Crow laws were abolished, how on a hidden way, it's still maintained, and that's what they call the Southern strategy. And for me, that's a very important term. I really want to know about the term for every facet of it, because that's very dangerous. And what I also found out, and it's also mentioned in the documentary 13, that industries and politics are too much entangled. You had that organization ALEC, and all these industries have been, or maybe still are, I'm still researching that, but ALEC exists for all kinds of industries and all kinds of politicians, and together we make the laws. When I think about the law that at that time was implemented, Stand Your Ground, that was in Florida, that's one of the most dangerous laws ever implemented. But it also had to do with the gun lobby was involved in it, and Walmart was at that time a member of ALEC. So it made a lot of money to implement the Stand Your Ground law. And the Stand Your Ground law, how many people have been killed, and the murderers did not get any sentence because they could point to potential ground law. It's one of the most dangerous things. And do you still hear me?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. You know, what I was going to say, though, is that if there was a pilot project that where certain prisoners or a small portion of prisoners were sent to some of these countries where they seem so successful in the way that they operate their facilities. I think that would be awesome. But to do nothing, you know, they say if something doesn't work, you want to try something different. We're hearing about all the different countries that have successes in their penal system, and yet no one is making an effort in this country to even try to find out or to try their approach. And they and we have mass incarceration. There's going to be at some point in time more people incarcerated than there are out in the communities, because they just keep putting people in with no resolution, and they fail to follow suit with other countries. Maybe it's because of the United States pride, because people in this country want to feel like they are in, superior to all other countries. Well, other countries are actually laughing at this country, because this country is so functional at this time, and everything that they do is falling apart. So I don't know why they're not taking suit, whether it be in the Netherlands, in Norway, which they say is one of the most humane of all prisons, and Germany and England and all these other places. It's almost as though, out of pride, the government in this country does not want to follow suit. And it's sad because so many families are being ripped apart on both sides. We have an epidemic in this country of addictions and mental illnesses. And these people are being thrown in prisons where, like you mentioned earlier, that prisoner from Florida that was scalded to death by the guards. And I don't even know if they ever spent a day in prison themselves. To put someone in the shower, to turn the water up to 180 degrees and scald someone to death and walk away laughing while all the prisoners on the block could hear that man screaming for his life. This is the kind of mentality that we have of our system in this country, and it's a shame. It's really a shame to even talk about
it. Yeah, well, that's what I want to find out, these mechanisms, because there are, of course, people who... There are groups who benefit from this situation. Otherwise, it wouldn't exist. It exists because there are... And I don't only want to talk about the million-dollar industry. There is more to it. That's what I want to find out. I see. You know, I see it this way. If you look at it on a symbolic way, if you have a wall, and you want to break down that wall, then you first have to know exactly how the wall has been built. You have to know what tools you need to break down that wall. So you have to know what kind of material is it built from, etc., etc. That's exactly the same as with the prison. There's I think also that people are stubborn, what you said, and they want to be superior to the whole world. That's one thing. But there's also what I want to research, and I'm really getting into interesting things, I want to know who benefits from this situation, that they maintain, that they want to maintain the situation as it is. And what I also, because in my book, I go, it's like a funnel. Now I'm doing the research on the system. So the system here in the North European countries versus the system in the United States, that's an offset. And I'm going looking at exactly the same mechanisms and how they are approached in your country and how they are approached here. And from there, I also want to research about the COs, how people work, because if I think about these two girls who did that to that man in the shower, how is it possible that they could do that and then go home to the family and have a dinner or whatever and live their life? There is something, and I don't want to make it too easy. I don't want to only say, oh yes, they are evil or bad man or what. There is more to it, because if you are normal, then you cannot do it. You cannot do that. I cannot do it in the universe. You cannot do that to other forms of life. You cannot do it. So there is something in the people, the way they are trained, the way they have learned to think, etc. I really want to have insight in it. And from there, I go on with the same approach. So I go from system to staff to the incarcerated people themselves, and I want to go in there too. So it's like a funnel, and I want to have these hidden mechanisms I want to make invisible in my book. So, and that's very interesting because I come to very interesting conclusions. And because I want my book, not the next book about the well-known things, I want my book to add something to it. That's why I'm writing on it. Really, it's very interesting to write on it. I go a lot deeper. I really go deep in it. It has to be done. I feel it like a mission. I don't know why, but it feels that way. Because this is insane. And what I mentioned very shortly about people who have mental problems, and they are all thrown into prisons, and when they get released, they are again a danger in the streets because their mental issues are not solved. And that's so sad and so inhumane. I have no words for it, Leon. I have no words for it.
And prisoners are actually saying the same thing you're saying, that people, they don't care, but these people, a lot of these prisoners eventually will be released someday, and for them to go through what they're going through right now is not healing them. It's making them more frustrated. It's making them more sick than they were when they first went in. And if they come out, and the time to bring them out is now. The time to treat them humane is when they first enter the prison. But we have overseers in these the penal system that are more distraught, that are more ill psychologically than some of the prisoners going in. And unfortunately, there's no oversight. There's no one independent oversight.
No, exactly. There is no control.
No.
Everybody can do anything. You know, the whole prison system, well, first what I want to respond about what you said about the incarcerated people. The problem is human beings enter the system and inmates get out, and I'm not talking about labor. You know? So human beings enter the system, inmates get out, inmates, the labor inmates cannot survive in the world. It's impossible. Because he's lost the contact with his own humanity. And that's the great danger for himself, for society. It is a wonder, I think, when people survive the system. There is, I mean, that's what I meant to say, there is no, what you say, there is no controlling instance, no controlling system that controls the system. So the whole prison system, it's mystical. We cannot grasp it. You know, it's all veiled. It's mystical. We don't really know what's happening in the prison. The system has its own codes. Its own. I've been very close to someone was in Florida, and I found that we both communicated from two different worlds. You know, I felt like Alice in Wonderland, and they didn't know the codes of the system. So, and like the systems in the Netherlands, but is more in Norway, they try to bring prison life as close as domestic life as possible. But then you get, again, you know, when you do a crime, you have to do the time. But it's not about if you have to do time, but it's about how you have to do the time. Now, if somebody kills one of my kids, he has to be punished, but only by doing time. And the time he's doing has to be used for healing, for insight, for the deeper justice. You know, what I say is, I said before, a crime is always embedded in all kinds of bias. I see it when I work with people here. I have one man here, I had a lot of sessions with. He found out that a part of this wives laid in his history, the history of his people. That's very important. That was a very important insight. He's released now, and I know he's not going to do the same crime because he knows now where it came from. He knows. Are you still hearing me? Hello?
I'm still with you. I just put myself on mute while you were talking.
When you think about a crime, a murder or a burglary or whatever, there can be two things. If you are, you can have all kinds of problems that you have in the youth, drugs problem, etc. You have to get insight in how these wives work. You also have to find out if you have mental illnesses. Someone who has a bipolar disorder and he commits a crime, that's a totally different crime than someone who is on drugs or someone who has been abused in his youth or someone who is. There are also, of course, people who do this because they are bad people. We also have people here who have life sentences, but we also have people who will never get better from their disorders and will stay in a long stay of a forensic clinic, for instance. They cannot be released, but they have a humane life behind bars, which is very look-alike domestic life as we know. You always have to stay. For me, it's very important that we always stay humane, because when we dehumanize the other person, then we are criminal. You know, the two men who boiled that man are criminals.
Exactly.
They have to be locked up themselves. Not only lose their job or something. No, they are maybe very sick, because you are sick if you do it. So they have to be locked up. They have to be punished. They also have to find out what their web of influence is. That's what I also try to find out. Because if I am a CEO, I only, from who I am, I'm just a normal human being. I don't have a disorder. I don't have a difficult youth. I cannot treat human beings on any humane way. I just simply cannot do it. So there is something in me as a human being that prevents me from doing that, and it makes me a human being. So what makes CEOs, and I'm not talking about all CEOs, but what makes CEOs being able to cross that line of humanity? There's something in it. The training they are given, the problem that a lot of black people are seen as inferior to the white, that can be a problem. But there's also something in the CEO himself that he is able to cross that line of humanity. What you cannot do, and what I cannot do.
It's because they know they can get away with it, and they have in most situations. Unfortunate, and like you say, if there are some people that may need to be in there for the rest of their lives because they'll never be able to be rehabilitated if their mentality, if the mental illness is that serious, or if it's serious terrorists. But like you say, it should be in a humane way where they can survive without suffering the rest of their lives, and you don't know how long that life would be.
Exactly, yes.
But I was going to say, too, people look at people in uniforms and with titles as being one that does not do anything wrong. And unfortunately, we saw, even with the recent case with that George Floyd and that police, right in broad daylight in front of everyone, because he knew or felt he could get away with it. But the sad thing is, people in uniform are still human beings, just like everybody else. And they either have psychological problems themselves, or they were raised to have that kind of hatred in them, or they know they can get away with it. But they're still human beings, and they can be just as criminal. Just as criminal.
Exactly. And part of the mechanism in prison is the uniform itself. The uniform, as I said, seeing a uniform is already looking at power. It doesn't matter who is wearing the uniform itself, the clothes, is already a way of power. So that's the same with discipline. If you look sometimes, you can, you know, I was looking at documentaries earlier, and sometimes you can see that there are hundreds of inmates, hundreds of people, inmates together, and only a few COs. And I'm describing how this is possible. It's only a few COs have this possibility to control a large group. So that's very interesting and very important for me, and I think it's important anyway to get very clear how the mechanism works, it's saying the discipline. So what you see, I found very interesting literature about it too, is that the system itself, because I'm not talking about the people, the puppets, but the system itself keeps incarceration going inside. And another very important mechanism is keeping things veiled, keeping things mystical. We do not really exactly know what is happening in the system. And what you said before, there is no control. There is no control. So inside the system, people can do what they want. And they also pressure each other. You cannot betray your colleagues, because then you have a problem. So you keep your mouth shut. There was a nurse who had to, years ago, who had to take care of the wounds of a prisoner who had been beaten up by a guard. She quit her job because she couldn't stand it anymore. She also could not complain because it was dangerous for her or her family. So a lot is going on, what we don't know, and it's all veiled, and it's all behind mist. It's very mystical. It's not transparent. It's not open. And it has, all these elements have these goals. There is a reason why it maintains, why it goes on and on and on, and it doesn't stop. And now you see Trump, I see exactly the same mechanisms. I can say I cannot vote in November, but what I see is that he also, in another way again, because every president uses his own labels. You know, slavery has been made by presidents without calling, using the name slavery or using the name racism. They don't use the name black or segregation. They use other labels. They use legal terms. They know exactly how to appeal to the white supreme voters. And that's been done. And that's the southern strategy. That's very important. Very important. Very important. I'm really researching this from to the bottom, because that's such an important thing. And that's also a veiled way of talking by politicians, you know, behind labels. And that's what you see reflected. The mass incarceration reflects society, reflects politics, reflects everything. It's the mirror of society. Are you still there?
Yes.
That's a little...
Can you hear me? I'm sorry. We're having...
Yes,
every now and then, it's fading in and out. But, you know, with your insight, Miriam, and with all the information you have, and you know both sides, you know the United States and you know the Netherlands, and I'm sure you've done your research as well with other countries. But some of the things is, again, it should be so simple. For people, for the governments around, and you mentioned racism. You know, I have a problem with people calling one another whites or blacks. Everybody has a culture. Everyone has their ethnic origin. And this is the way people should be addressed as to their culture. What makes everything so beautiful in this world are the various colors. You know, if people could just look at the beautiful colors in this entire world, instead of trying to pick out beautiful colors in one area, and when it comes to human beings, to label them. And I just think it's so unfair, but this is a problem I think that contributes to mass incarceration. And when you talk about deeper justice, I mean, that's right on. That is right on, because there are so many issues that have taken place where, as you say, we need to look at the cause. We need to look at the cause of the crime instead of the individual themselves. The book, before we get too far more into it, can you just let the audience know how they can find your book, where they can locate it, and also give them information as to how they can connect with you or contact you for comments or questions?
Yeah, the book is not finished yet. I'm still writing, but it will be on my website. I have my website. It's also written. All the texts on my website are also written in English. So that's not a problem. And it's www.deeperjustice.com. And also, there's no capitals, but it's small letters. That's my website, and they also can contact me there.
So it's www.deeperjustice.com?
Yeah, that's my website.
Okay. And you are on Facebook as well, right?
I'm also on Facebook and on LinkedIn.
Okay, great. So if anyone wants to contact you, they can contact you via
the website, via Facebook. Website, I think it's the best, but also via Facebook or via my LinkedIn.
Okay.
LinkedIn. Well, I would like to, if we still have time. I don't know how much time we have left.
Oh, we have
15. Oh, it's an hour now. Okay. Well, what you said is very interesting. What you said about, you know, the racism, and that we should look at the whole, all the colors that, you know, that they contribute to each other. Well, that's a very important thing for me too, because if you look at nature, you know, we all, everything exists from systems. We have systems, and we have the artificial systems, and we are talking about the prison system. But you have also the natural systems. The human species, is one of the top systems between all kinds of other natural systems. And in the human species, what you say, we have different colors of subsystems in the human species. And when they work, it's a natural thing that when they coexist together, they strengthen the human species. So I always say, if you kill another person, or if you, what they now do with the racism, looking at our colors as inferior, then they weaken their own system too. We need each other. If the human species would be without the black race, it would be a weak species. If you look simply from nature, you know, from biology. So racism, I read a beautiful quote from an Indian man, a Native American. He said that he didn't understand why people attack each other because that they also kill themselves. And I think that's a very basic thought that we have lost in Western society. We fight, but fighting our races, we also fight ourselves. And that's one of the basic problems, I think, what you see in the world as well, but also in the Western world and in the United States.
Yeah, I know years ago, and I know times change and everything, but years ago, people, they didn't have life without parole the way they do today. And people came out. We have judges who serve time in prison, even on television, the real judges who have served time in prison for crimes and others that have served life or were supposed to serve 25 years, I guess, to life. But they got out and everything was successful. So I don't know how or where along the road, the line, that they started just handing out life sentences and life without parole sentences just for everything and anything. It's almost like they, in the United States, the mentality is if you do a crime, just lock them up, throw the key away, and we don't have to deal with them anymore, especially around campaign, election time. No one wants to talk about the issue, and that's sad because they're showing right there that they're more for getting these votes than they are for human lives, and whether it's incarcerated or in the communities. You know, it's sad. It really is sad.
But I think the part of the problem is that the hidden agenda is that to disrupt the black and the poor community by locking all the men up and all the families go up without the fathers. People and the black and the poor people, communities are disrupted, they cannot protest. So that's one of the hidden agenda, political agenda that serves a goal. You see, I think when you go deeper and you go to history, then when the 4 million black people were not slaves anymore, they tried to figure out other ways to still enslave them because they didn't know what to do with these people. And that's where it all started. You see, a whole psychological sort of a game. Game is not the right word, but I can't smart enough. But you see that the whole psychological line, there is a refuse of living together as black people and the white people. You know, that's one of the most important problems beneath all what we see. The length of the sentences, maybe I mentioned it before, but sometimes you could think in the Netherlands or maybe it's also in Norway and other North European countries, the sentences are shorter. It has a goal, it has a reason, because when we sentence someone, it's not only because of the crime. We look at you have to set the length of the sentence not to only the crime, but the whole world's influence around the crime. So, because and it has the we say that the sentences have to be. Have to fit also, of course, because of the victims, but it has to be as short as possible because the longer someone is incarcerated, the longer he is away from his domestic life, and the more he loses his job, his study, his home, maybe his relationship is going to be devastated. The longer the sentence, the further away he comes, he stands from the domestic life, the more difficult it is to go back into normal life, and the greater the chance is to go back into the criminal life. Because, and what I also find crazy is, when I look at the halfway houses, they have to pay for it themselves. but they have no jobs.
Yeah.
So what do you have to do if you have no job? Then you have to sell, for instance, sell drugs or something. I would have to do that too, everybody, because you need money. We need money to eat and to survive. So it's like when I look at these rules which are insane, it's like they did it on purpose to serve an agenda which is hidden from our normal thinking. I hope I can say it a little bit clear, but I want to know what's the hidden agenda beneath Mass Incarcerate. I want to know what are the mechanisms. And the book is not ready yet. It will take a few months because I'm very serious in it. I take a lot of literature. I take a lot of, in my book, I also use a lot of cases from incarcerated people. But I also really want to have the experience in Norway. I really have to get this picture complete, and it's doing deeper justice to what is happening to us, all of us. I don't know if you're still hearing me.
Yes, yes, and
okay.
I'm hearing you loud and clear, because that's what I often ask too, is what is happening to all of us? What is?
What I hope to do, I don't know, because I'm just one human being, one philosopher, there are so many people incarcerated. But maybe one of the feelings I carry with myself when I think about why I write this book is people have the right to know what is happening beneath the surface and to get aware of what's happening, because there are not only 2.2 million people incarcerated, there are also 2.2 million families incarcerated. So it affects so much, and it's a shame for not only the United States, it's a shame for the human species that we do this to each other. And that's why I hope to contribute on my small way with this book. I hope in a way that some key figures can read my book and can get something out of it. And, well, what I believe is change starts with awareness. You have to first get aware. Do you still hear me?
Yes.
Yes, I think that change, whether it is for incarcerated man or woman who has to need, wants to get aware of his own situation and his web of influence, change also, I think that can also be applied to the whole system. We can only change the system if we really are aware of all these games, political games that are played, all these hidden agendas. We have to know why, how it's possible that there is no control of the whole system. Why we all let this happen? We have to know this. We really have to know this. Because it's very unfair. It's very unfair to everybody. It's very unfair. Really.
And like I say, with people and their animals, many people have pets of all colors. And they treat their pets with the greatest of respect and love and compassion and feeding them and then when it comes again to human beings, it's almost, I mean, how does one think that way? How does anyone look at another human being so inferior, and yet they treat their own animals, it's almost as though people get treated worse than animals. And I'm sorry, I know crime happens. It's something that we can't deny. But the same reason, I remember years ago, there was a man, it was on television, it was on the news, that there was a man that had murdered several people. And he ended up in Georgia, and he ended up in this woman's home. And the woman was totally, she talked to the man, she told the man she had children, she told the man she didn't want to die, but she let him talk, and they talked, and he saw the compassion in her, because she was understanding what he was going through, that he had problems and everything. But by the time they got through, he actually let her loose. He let her go out of her home and go and get some help. This man went to prison, but it goes to show you the difference in the way people interact. And this woman, however she did it, and I give her praises to this day, she had courage, but she also had compassion.
Yeah.
And somehow her life was spared.
And her compassion brought him to deeper justice in himself.
Deeper justice.
Yes, awareness. It's about awareness. Because of her compassion, he as a human being could exist at that moment. She appealed to the being behind that criminal. And because she did that, he could come, he could connect with his own human being. That's what deeper justice is. That's what growing to that high awareness is. That's the only real way to come to real healing. And it's not so different from people who are not criminals. We all learn in our lives through experience. When we work these experiences through, we all go through the process of higher consciousness, by getting to know ourselves better. And when you know yourself better, you also know the other person better. And then you also feel responsible to yourself, but also to the other person. That's also all connected to each other. A person who commits a crime and is not seeking help, because someone with psychiatric problems, that's different. If you have no disorders and you commit a crime, at that moment, you didn't feel responsibility. So you also have to go through the life, the wires in the life of that person, and seek for, hey, how does responsibility play a role in your life, in your youth, when you grew up, when things happened with you, when you did. People have, they have insight in that, because a lot we do automatically, and they have to become aware of it. And so if someone turns out to be dangerous, you know that he can never be free, he cannot be released, then coming to that conclusion has to be the outcome of this process. But what you see now is that the conclusion, that a life sentence is not a conclusion of a process. It's coupled, it's connected to only the crime. You know, you also see people who have served 20 years, they can go and appeal, and in these 20 years they did their best, they did not do any drugs in the prison, they took all parts of the process, they really did their best, they did all good behavior, and still just does not look only as a trial. So they don't see it as changing in these 20 years.
Well, we're running out of time now. So I would like to invite you back on again on the 25th, which is a week, 2 weeks away on the same day, because I'd like to hear more about your book, Deeper Justice, and I'd like to have you finish talking about what we've been discussing as far as deeper justice goes. I want everyone to know that Marion Jacobs, our has so much insight into what's going on, and when her book is ready, I'd like to have everyone read it, because I know we're going to all benefit from it. And again, Marion, I thank you so much for being on with us, and we will be talking to just confirm the interview for the 25th, which is the Tuesday after next. And we Tuesday will be having with us Jan Banning to talk about his work, his art, and his photography into some of those areas as well. But mainly having you back on with us on August 25th. And I look forward to that interview. And thank you so much again. If you have anything, any last words to say, I'd appreciate it. Thank you, Marion.
You're welcome, and thank you too. And what I have to say is, I like to keep you informed about the book. It's going to be translated in English, of course. And I look forward to the next interview too. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being on with us. And I, the reason I did a 1 hour today is in this week with others is because we've been getting so many that have been coming on wanting to be interviewed or having something to share. And so we are going to be cutting back for a time for 1 hour. But Marion, I look forward to every interview that we are going to be having with you. And I thank you so much for your willingness to come on and tell your story about your work and your book, upcoming book. Thank you so, so much.
Okay, you're welcome, and thank you too, and have a good week, okay?
Thank you. And we are now going to be signing out, everyone. Thank you for joining us, and look for us on Facebook. And anyone that wants to hear this interview with Marion Jacobs can also go on the internet and type in Marion Jacobs interview, and it'll come up. All the interviews that we've had. So much.
And my website has also interesting offers for those who are interested.
www.deeperjustice.com. Thank you so much, Marion.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.